Thomas Hobbes was thinking and working in England at the time, mid-17th century. And at this time, Hobbes was doing lots of really interesting things, including objecting and responding to Descartes. But really, he's much more well-known for doing his own thing. And his most famous work is a work by the name of The Leviathan, L-E-V-I-A-T-H-A-N. And in The Leviathan, Hobbes is concerning himself with some major events that are happening in his world at the time. Hobbes is in England in the mid-17th century, the mid-1600s, and if you remember some of your history, there is some pretty heavy shit going down in England at the time. Do any of you remember what it is? Take a second and think if any of you remember what's going on in England in the mid-1600s? Yes? No? Maybe? Well, in 1649, you may remember that there was essentially a civil war in England. It was a time of obvious unrest, and Charles I was the monarch on the throne, and there was a revolt, and Charles I was overthrown and executed, beheaded. And the monarchy, not only was that particular monarch overthrown and beheaded, the whole monarchy, the whole style of government called monarchy was abolished forever. And there was so-called commonwealth established. And this was going to be a commonwealth government as opposed to a monarchical government. And the monarchy was abolished forever. There was never going to be another monarch, another king or queen on the throne ever again in England. And there was going to be this commonwealth. And a guy named Oliver Cromwell put himself as the so-called Lord Protector of this commonwealth. And this was a major big deal. Now, of course, within a dozen years, less than a dozen years, Cromwell himself was dead, and Charles II, Charles I's son, was on the throne. And there has been a monarch. There was another monarch, and the monarchy has been back ever since. But at the time, this was a big deal. This was heavy. This was stuff that was going on that was concerning Hobbes at the time. And essentially what Hobbes does in this way is to try to ask the big question, this whole mess that we just went through with the Civil War, was this a good idea? Was this something we should have done? Is this a step in the right direction or not? And so what he wants to do is kind of try to figure out what the basis for any sort of government might be. I mean, if one wants to claim that X style of government is better than Y style of government, you have to be able to give some sort of justification for that, some sort of reason for why that's the case. And your reason is probably going to be something that has to do with morality. And if you're thinking about morality, well, you have to find some sort of source of that, some sort of foundation for that. And so that's how Hobbes directs his attention. He tries to first ask this question, where does this kind of governmental structure come from? On what is it based? And where do we get these ideas in the first place? And if we can do that, then maybe we can try to understand or come to understand what kind of government structure might be best, and that might help us learn if this particular action was a good one or a right one or a wrong one. So the Leviathan is, there's a lot going on in this book, The Leviathan, there's a particular place that's kind of a key chapter in The Leviathan. It's really the crux of the book. And it kind of really gets down to the nitty-gritty of the basic thing that Hobbes is talking about. And that's chapter 13. And that's where we're going to turn now. And we're just going to basically go through this and try to understand what this is saying. So Let's see if we can get through this and try to understand what's going on here. What claims are Hobbes making, and ultimately, do you think his arguments are good ones? Has he really done a good job of trying to understand and come to conclusions about how government and society should work? Now, before we get started, going into this, notice that Hobbes is indeed writing in English. He's from England. But we're talking about, you know, mid-17th century English. So the spelling and the grammatical structure is a little bit different than you may be used to. So it might take you a minute to kind of think about what he's saying. But he really is writing in English, and he really is writing pretty clearly. So let's turn to this opening portion of the excerpt. As you're going along, try to think about what he's saying. See if you can figure out on your own. And it's a good idea maybe to pause the audio after we go through some of the written portions before I give an explanation, just for your own benefit. If you can understand this stuff on your own, this is always good. This should always be a goal for you to try to get this on your own. So, okay. Nature hath made men so equal in faculties of body and mind, as that though there be found one man sometimes manifestly stronger in body or of quicker mind than another, yet when all is reckoned together, the difference between man and man is not so considerable as that one man can thereupon claim to himself any benefit to which another may not pretend as well as he. For as to the strength of body, the weakest has strength enough to kill the strongest, either by secret machination or by confederacy with others that are in the same danger with himself. So the opening sentence of this excerpt is really, really important as the kind of starting point. And it's important to understand why this is a big deal. Nature hath made men so equal in the faculties of body and mind. Now, he's saying that we humans are equals. We're equal to one another. Now, it's important to recognize the significance of this. We're not equal in every way. He's certainly not saying that. He says right after this that there are differences, right? But those differences are not so considerable as that one man can thereupon claim to himself any benefit to which another may not pretend as well as he. Basically, he's saying we understand that we humans are equal, naturally equal as humans, because we can kill each other. The weakest has strength enough to kill the strongest, either by secret machination or something else. That's, first of all, an interesting claim as to why we know we're equal. We can all kill each other. But more than that, it's also a very important claim. Because you may not remember this or know this, but at the time, you know, of course, we're talking about monarchy and we're talking about overthrowing that and we're talking about all sorts of different things going on here, but there wasn't just a monarch. There was also this gentry class, this aristocratic class, the lords and the dukes and the marquises and all these sorts of things. And these people were literally thought of as being a different class of people. We're not talking about just economic class. It was really thought that these people were of a different kind. They were different kinds of human beings. They were more valuable human beings, in a sense. They really were different classes of people. This is part of the reason why they were so upset when there was this intermingling. Many people were so upset when there was anytime there was intermingling between the lower class and the upper class, because it was literally thought that you would be tainting the bloodline. You would be ruining or harming your superior status, the superior status of your genes and of your biological standing. And the monarch, the king was the king because God willed it so. The whole idea of the divine right of kings is very, very prevalent at the time. So it was pretty well believed and understood that we are not equal. And here we get Hobbes, and of course we missed the first 12 chapters. We don't need to read the first 12 chapters, and he's explaining other reasons why this is going to be the case. But here we get Hobbes just coming in and saying, nope, we're equal. How do I know? We can all kill each other. The king might be the king, but the poorest pauper could still have the least strength enough to bop the king on the head with a rock and kill him. Right? So, really, why are you here? Why am I here? Well, because nobody's decided to kill us yet. That's why we're here. And we can protect ourselves and so on, but really we're all just fragile humans, and we all have the strength within us to kill other humans. So this is really a bigger claim than it might seem at first to be, that we are actually equal in nature. As natural creatures, natural animals, we are equals. Then he gives us another reason. As to the faculties of mind, I find yet a greater equality amongst men than that of strength. For prudence is but experience, which equal time equally bestows on all men in those things they equally apply themselves unto. That which may perhaps make such equality incredible is but a vain conceit of one's own wisdom, which all men, almost all men, think they have in a greater degree than the vulgar. That is, that all men but themselves and a few others whom by fate or for concurring with themselves they approve. For such is the nature of men, that howsoever they may acknowledge many others to be more witty, or more eloquent, or more learned, they will hardly believe that there be many so wise as themselves, for they see their own wit at hand and other men's at a distance. But this proveth rather that men are in that point equal than unequal. For there's not ordinarily a greater sign of the equal distribution of anything than that every man is contented with his share. Okay, so he's saying there's this greater reason that we know we're equal. Why? Well, here he's also being pretty straightforward. He's saying, well, okay, think about this. Pretty much everyone thinks they know best, right? Such is the nature of men, that even though, this is how we just are, even though you might acknowledge someone else to have more education, or maybe to be a little bit more well-spoken or eloquent or more witty or whatever, maybe you might acknowledge those things, but you still think you know best, right? And so does everyone else. They think they know best. Now, that doesn't mean you actually do know best, but you sure think you do. So, okay, if everyone thinks they know best, then that means everyone is content with their share of wisdom. Everyone's happy with the wisdom that they have because everyone thinks they have the most, right? So, Hobbes is saying, if that's the case, what could be a greater sign of equal distribution? If everyone's happy with their share, that must mean there's equal distribution. So, we've got these two basic reasons here why we are naturally equal. All right, well, this goes, as I said, very counter to what is commonly believed at the time. This might sound like a good thing. This equality might sound like it's jolly and wonderful and happy and all that stuff. We love equality, right? Equality is wonderful. However, Hobbes wants to analyze this a little bit further. He wants to say, well, let's take a little harder look at this. Let's see what actually happens when we're talking about this equality. So we get the next section here. It says, from equality proceeds diffidence. Now, diffidence is a word that you might run into. It's not used too often these days, but it's still a word that you might run into every now and again. And it's a word that really has changed meaning over the years. It's used today a little differently than the way that someone like Hobbes is using it. So let's see if we can figure out what he's getting at here. From this equality, this that we've just established, ariseth equality of hope in the attaining of our ends. And therefore, if any two men desire the same thing, which nevertheless they cannot both enjoy, they become enemies, and in the way to their end, endeavor to destroy or subdue one another. And from hence it comes to pass that where an invader hath no more to fear than another man's single power, if one plant, so build, or possess a convenient seat, others may probably be expected to come prepared with forces united to dispossess and deprive him, not only of the fruit of his labor, but also of his life or liberty. And the invader, again, is in the like danger of another. Okay, so from this we can tell what diffidence, what Hobbes is using diffidence to mean. It means conflict, right? If we both desire something, something that we both, you and I, want, and we're talking about just purely natural animals here. If there's something that we both desire, something we both want, then, but there's only one of them, for example, well, then, hey, we might fight each other for it. Now, why does this come from, why does this proceed, as he says, from equality? Well, look, if there's inequality, right, if there really is a legitimate difference between different classes of people, right? If those lords or marquises or dukes or monarchs even are in a very literal sense actually superior people, superior beings to you and I, then they deserve the benefits and the things that they have that we don't. To take maybe sort of an extreme example, look at ancient Egypt. Look at Pharaoh in ancient Egypt. Well, Pharaoh's got a lot of shit that the rest of us just don't have, right? And, you know, I'm of a deity. So Pharaoh has stuff that I don't have. Okay, that's fine, because he's Pharaoh. Well, okay, what if we realize that he's not a god? What if we realize that those aristocrats, those so-called nobles, really aren't actually superior human beings to us? Well, then maybe I'm no longer content to just let them have those things that we don't have. If I realize that we're actually equals, then, hey, why do you get to have that and I don't? You're no better than me. Why do you get to have it and I don't? I'm going to take it from you. Or, at the very least, I'm going to fight you for that resource that we both want. If you really were a superior being, I might just bow out and let you take it. But if I realize that we're equals, maybe I won't do that anymore. So the basic idea here is that equality leads to conflict. There is stability in inequality. That's a foreign concept. That's a concept that goes very counter to the way that we tend to think today. But it's an interesting one. Hobbes makes really an interesting case here. Hobbes is thinking of humans as essentially these selfish creatures, these creatures who are after their own gain, their own self-interest, and if we realize that we're equal and we're all selfish, then maybe he's right that conflict arises from that. So we have so far a setup of this natural equality that we see. And then from this realization of this equality, we get conflict. Something else happens from this, you see the next title, from diffidence, from this conflict, war. So there's going to be a part two here of the audio, but before you open the part two, maybe try to look at that next section or the next couple of sections really on your own and see what he's claiming here and how this will pan out.